a year ago when the monumental earthquake hit Haiti, a 250,000 people died. Even more than that were injured, and roughly 1 million were left homeless. But the tragedy didn't end there.
My mother woke up and asked what was happening. They said, "We have not come for you. We come for the girl." The gangsters beat my mother, my grandmother, my little brother. Then all four of them raped me.
That's the voice of a young girl named Cassandra from a Frontline documentary called Battle for Haiti. She's one of the victims in that film that shows what happened when more than 4,000 prisoners escaped from a national penitentiary after the earthquake and started a reign of terror over the nation's tent cities. Dan Reeds examines this precarious situation in his new Frontline documentary, Battle for Haiti. It airs tonight on PBS channels. And William Gardner appears in the film. He's the chief of the UN's Community Violence Reduction Program in Haiti. And William, let's start with you. Describe how these gangs of criminals have managed to rise to power in Haiti.
Yeah, about 4,000 evaded from the National Penitentiary, which is the largest prison in Haiti, and immediately started retaking over the slums that they used to control before they were arrested. Many of these have now been arrested again, but, I mean, this doesn't really solve the problem, just arresting them again, because the state functions are so dysfunctional that the serious criminals, once they are arrested and put in jail, they very often pay their way out and are re-released. The ones that remain in jail are the lower echelons, the lower levels of the gangs that don't have the money to pay their way out. So, again, I mean, yes, they did escape. They are being put back in, but the problems of Haiti go much further back than the dates of the earthquake.
Dan Reed, producer of this new Frontline documentary, Battle for Haiti. You know, we talked with a number of people on the program right after the earthquake who thought that the quake itself and the severity of the quake might actually motivate the government to be more connected with the people. And there was a certain amount of optimism there. But there are characters that you spoke with in your film who have expressed a degree of cynicism and really fear that things have returned so quickly to chaos. Describe some of those characters, if you could.
Well, the just from my reporting on the ground in Haiti, I discovered a huge preoccupation, and William knows this well from first-hand experience, a massive preoccupation with security. People, particularly in the tent camps, which took shape as the earthquake survivors looked for places to live, out in the open and put their tents and shelters together. Out in the tent camps, there's a lot of fear. There's a great number of rapes that have been going on. And generally, and I think, William, you'll back me up on this, the tent camps have become a refuge for all sorts of criminal elements because they provide a bit of a safe haven. There are no streets. There are no house numbers. It's a good place to go and hide. And the other huge preoccupation on people's minds on the ground in Haiti is the absence of government, the absence of a functioning state, and the absence of rule of law. All the things which allow you to build a life and to work and to try and improve your lot. All these the environment for that is missing because there is simply no government.
In the making of your film Battle for Haiti, was this among the priorities when you spoke to people and asked them, what does Haiti need? What do you want to see? I mean, you say they have a preoccupation with security. Is the gang problem high on their list of priorities?
Yeah, the gang problem, or the crime problem, is pervasive in all the slum neighborhoods and the tent cities. And so if you're someone who's trying to make a living by setting up a street stall, or you're trying to get your kids to school, or whatever it is you're trying to do, in the absence of any help from the government or any protection from the government, you're really exposed and defenseless. And so gangs, or just groups of criminal youths, prey on all the people who are trying to get back on their feet after the earthquake, and as William said, this problem is this lack of security and lack of protection is a problem that dates from way, way before the quake. And really, one of the big points I want to make in my film, that I do make in the film, is that in order for the money and the aid that the international community and all the people of goodwill have been sending to Haiti, in order for that to have any effect and any real impact, you have to have rule of law and you have to have a functioning state. And so dealing with this basic lack of security at grassroots is probably the most important thing that we could be doing at the moment.
So are you saying in your film, and it sounds like based on the history, that certain levels of chaos and assault and brutality of civilians is not necessarily a surprise in Haiti, sadly, but that maybe it will come as a surprise to people who've given money, that your premise is, and it sounds like it's borne out in the film, that all the money that went to Haiti after the earthquake was thrown down a rat hole?
That's a strong way of putting it. Yeah, I mean, the head of the UN mission, Edmond Millet, you know, backs this up. He says, look, unless we have rule of law, and by that he doesn't just mean law and order on the streets, but he means courts and a way to identify people, because it's so hard to identify anyone. If you, the police arrest someone, they don't really know who it is. They don't know if he's an escape prisoner or not half the time. And so all of those things, if you want to set up a factory or you want to do anything to help the country, you need to know you're buying that land off the right owner or renting it off the right owner. So the whole complex of measures which make up the rule of law are completely lacking. The UN chief said, these were his words, unless we fix that, all of the stuff we're doing, all this, the aid and all the international community's efforts are going to be in vain.
Well, William Gardner, I mean, you're the chief of the UN's Community Violence Reduction Program in Haiti. That sounds like a problem that you really can't solve. I mean, how does one tackle the structure of government and the structure of the justice system in Haiti without taking over the country?
Well, that's exactly it. The UN is here in various forms. The UN is here as a stabilization mission, which has a stabilization mandate, which means, you know, saving people's or providing security on a day-to-day basis, but the UN does not have an executive mandate. So there are two approaches that are used in Haiti. One is to save lives on a daily basis, which is being done. The other approach is to work with the government institutions so as to build up the capacity so that they can start delivering all the range of services, as Dan pointed out, that can provide security to the population on a permanent basis. Now, the second approach is a lot harder to do and takes a lot more time. Certainly, the stabilization mission has provided security in Haiti for now almost 6 years. The levels of violence that we saw in 2005 and 2006 had dropped considerably right up to the day of the earthquake. With the earthquake, a lot of that ground that had been gained was lost. Now it's being gained back again, but the job of building up the government capacity is proving to be a long-term challenge.
That is William Gardner. He's the chief of the UN's Community Violence Reduction Program in Haiti. We also spoke with Dan Reed, the producer of the new Frontline documentary, Battle for Haiti, which is appearing on tonight on PBS channels. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.